This is 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station. WCHL's Morning News with Ron Stutz begins now.
Good morning. It is 8:07, 7 minutes after 8 o'clock at WCHL. 61 degrees in Chapel Hill. Cloudy this morning, then becoming partly sunny later on in the day after the fog clears away. Our high temperatures today in the low 70s. Tonight, partly cloudy and then more and more clouds moving in late. Probably after midnight, we'll have a little drizzle. Overnight low 55. Tomorrow, a chance of drizzle first thing in the morning and then cloudy all day with a slight chance of rain and a high in the middle 60s. Tomorrow night, cloudy with a low of 55. And then on Thursday, cloudy in the morning, then becoming partly sunny with a high in the upper 60s. Mild weather coming for your weekend. Neighbors of the proposed Obi Creek development lobbied the Chapel Hill Town Council last night to have their voices heard in the project's planning process. WCHL's Elizabeth Friend has details.
More than 30 concerned citizens showed up at last night's council work session, an unusual turnout for the less formal meetings that take place beyond the TV cameras. Even more unusually, the council broke protocol to give them a chance to speak their minds. Here's Jeannie Brown.
It is hard to understand why there is no formalized role for the community in leadership and decision-making process.
She's one of more than three dozen residents who turned out last night who live in Southern Chapel Hill near the proposed Obi Creek development on 15501 South across from Southern Village. The original plan for the 124-acre lot called for a high-density mixed-use retail and residential development. But the developer has agreed to start from scratch in order to explore a development agreement process for the project as an alternative to the contentious special use permit approval process. In March, town staffers put together a two-part plan for exploring and negotiating the agreement, a plan that featured public input sessions and workshops throughout the summer and fall. But neighbors said that's not enough. They want formal representation in the process of crafting a development agreement, and they asked the council to form a citizen task force. Developer Ben Perry of East West Partners agreed.
I think that would be tremendously helpful in disseminating information in every direction, keeping the neighbors up to date on what's going on, as well as providing an opportunity and ability to speak to the town in a clear fashion.
At last night's work session, several council members, including Matt Chakovsky, challenged town staffers' assertion that the current planning model allows for adequate public participation.
You tell us that this process is designed for ample community engagement. I thought I heard the community saying they didn't agree. That's an issue right there.
Council debated the merits of formal versus informal representation before settling on the idea of creating a task force, similar to the Central West Focus Area Steering Committee. That group is made up of 17 members from diverse backgrounds throughout Chapel Hill, who are working together to craft a small area plan for the corner of Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard and Estes Drive. Although pausing to form a new task force could push back the October deadline to complete the first phase, Gene Pease urged staff to take the time to get the process right.
Ultimately, if it's a better product, I would argue that's well worth in the scope of we're going to be living with this development for 20 or 30 years, another 2 or 3 or 4 months, well, who cares?
The council will revisit the issue at a business meeting next Wednesday with an eye to seating the task force before public information sessions kick off in May. Elizabeth Friend, 97.9 FM, WCHL.
We brought you several stories on area law enforcement and how they're working to keep you safe, but they don't do it alone. Working alongside those officers are the dogs of the canine units. They hunt down suspects, search out drugs, and detect bombs. WCHL's Rachel Nash has more.
It's vital to the safety of all of our officers. If we have somebody hiding somewhere that wants to do us harm, either in a wooded setting or a building or anywhere really, their ability to detect that odor long before we see that person, because we may not see them.
That's Sergeant Gabe Shin of the Chapel Hill Police Department. Shin says the Chapel Hill PD has 3 trained dogs with a keen sense of smell that's more crucial to officers than their bite.
Anytime we can get the dogs there to protect them. Again, it's an unpredictable job. We don't know what they're walking into. We don't know what might be in a building or what might be laying around the corner.
The dogs can also move fast. Shin says in a foot chase situation, he has never seen a suspect outrun a police dog. The 3 dogs are named MJ, Jax, and Kearney, and they actually live with their handlers, becoming a part of their families. MJ lives with Shin, and he explains this encourages a strong relationship between the dogs and their handlers. But police dogs are expensive, costing upwards of $10,000. However, the Chapel Hill PD's dogs were bought from private donations. The Chapel Hill PD does not have a bomb-sniffing dog, but the UNC Department of Public Safety does. Their canine unit is made up of Buddy, who came to the UNC Department of Public Safety in August of 2007. Buddy specializes in bomb detection, but is not trained in pursuits or locating missing persons. Randy Young of the UNC Department of Public Safety explains their canine unit began back in 2004. Young says, like other police dogs, Buddy is great with people, but is all business during high-profile community events like football games.
He's also extremely professional and needs to be, and pretty much just like what we would hope from any one of our officers here.
Buddy is trained in the identification of 25 to 30 different chemicals that are essential in most explosive devices. The UNC Department of Public Safety lends him out to other jurisdictions for big events. His handler, Officer Jeff Mosher, trains Buddy twice a month. Rachel Nash, 97.9 FM, WCHL.
And speaking of dogs, today is the day for Adopt-A-Pet. We'll have a dog or a cat up for adoption coming up in our next half hour on WCHL. Officials in Chapel Hill, Carborough, and Orange County are gearing up for another round of difficult budget talks. And although the economy may be on the rebound, Orange County Manager Frank Clifton says local governments still have no more money to work with than they did 5 years ago.
We're at 2008 levels, and actually the county's budget in 2008 is greater than it is today. That's a reality. The tax base for the county is not much different today than it was in 2008.
Still, Orange County officials say they're hopeful they can get through another two-year budget cycle without raising property taxes. WCHL's Aaron Keck reports.
Orange County Commissioner Alice Gordon says she's optimistic about the prospect of avoiding a tax hike in 2013.
You have to balance those things out, but I think going into the budget process, we're going to try not to raise the general property tax rate.
And while town governments, too, are anticipating some difficult budget decisions, officials in Carborough say they're also confident they can avoid raising taxes on residents this year. Here's Assistant Town Manager Matt Eford.
You know, just kind of speaking in generalities, our goal this year is to present a no tax increase budget, and the preliminary budget thus far does not include a tax increase.
But it's a different story in Chapel Hill, where officials are dealing with a variety of unique budget challenges. And as a result, Town Manager Roger Stansel says a tax increase may be unavoidable this year.
I apparently used up all the rabbits in my hat sooner than Frank and Matt did, but there is a brand new library open, and we've been saying, I think, for several years that to operate that library at the same level that the community is used to, that was an equivalent to a penny on the tax rate. The community decided to close the landfill and we take our garbage somewhere else. We said from the very beginning that was a penny on the tax rate, increased cost for the town of Chapel Hill to do that.
Compounding that, Stansel says, is the possibility of an additional penny tax increase from Chapel Hill Transit as well. While different local governments are expecting to make different decisions on the question of raising taxes, officials across the board agree that the coming budget talks are going to be difficult, especially now that municipal governments have already slimed their operations in previous budget cycles. Chapel Hill Town Council member Lauren Eastham says there's no such thing as an easy cut.
The services that we have in Chapel Hill exist because somebody wanted them, and they're useful services, and so it makes it really tough on us to decide to chip away or cut because we know that it will affect, you know, a certain group or everyone.
And Carborough Alderman Lydia Lavelle says she's particularly concerned for municipal employees who've gone without pay raises for years.
We've done a good job of stipends or other things the last couple of years, but as far as cost of living and as far as we've been struggling a little bit with the implementation of a living wage and how that affects all the other employees.
Municipal governments will begin their budget discussions later this spring. Clifton, Eastham, Eford, Gordon, Lavelle, and Stansel made those comments on Thursday during WCHL's annual community forum. You can revisit the entire 10-hour forum at any time by visiting our website, chapelborough.com. Aaron Keck, 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Online education is here to stay, and according to UNC Chancellor Holden Thorpe,
we need to be part of the conversation and part of the effort that's going into developing these things. But I don't think the extreme views on either side of this are correct. I don't think that this is going to disrupt residential college education overnight. And I also don't think that it's something we can ignore.
Coursera and 2U are online education models in their early stages, but already the attempts at making them viable options are in the works. Both programs are free and don't offer many options to receive course credit. However, Chancellor Thorpe says with the amount of attention they're getting, a truly new form of education is fast approaching.
Huge numbers of people sign up for these classes, but a relatively small percentage actually completes them. And the frontier in all this is trying to assess the work that the students do and to figure out whether it qualifies for college credit. And these are very difficult logistical and technical and pedagogical challenges.
Those comments were made during a WCHL News special with Jim Hebner for a special end-of-term interview with the chancellor. You can hear part three of that interview coming up just a few minutes from now at 8:30, and then again at 3:30 and 5:30 during the WCHL Afternoon and Evening News with Aaron Keck. The interview will be played in its entirety this Saturday and Sunday. 8:17, 17 minutes after 8 o'clock. Time now for Traffic and Weather Together on WCHL Traffic, brought to you this morning by Fifth Season Gardening in Carborough. Everything you need for organic gardening, plus unique plants, ceramic pots, and more to beautify your home and garden. Fifth Season, not your garden variety gardening store. Well, things have been moving along pretty well this morning as far as the traffic is concerned, and this is no exception. Some of the usual delays beginning to stack up on I-40 and also the entrances to I-40 from Highway 54 and Fordham Boulevard. But other than that, nothing really out of the ordinary taking place this morning. If you spot any accidents or experience any unusual delays that you need to know about, call us in the newsroom, 919-967-8363, and we'll pass along the word. WCHL's Chapel Hill Carborough Weather, brought to you this morning by Cruisers Convenience Marketplace. Fill up your tank and get your morning coffee, cappuccino, or hot chocolate, plus a freshly baked biscuit or pastry only at Cruisers. Good to go. It is 62 degrees in Chapel Hill right now. Cloudy this morning. Fog still with us in some spots, and after that all clears away, we'll have partly sunny skies today. High today in the low 70s, a little bit of breeze. Tonight, partly cloudy with a chance of drizzle, but probably not until after midnight. Overnight low around 55. Tomorrow, chance of drizzle first thing in the morning, and then cloudy with a slight chance of rain all day. High tomorrow about 65 degrees. That's it. Tomorrow night, cloudy with a low in the middle 50s. Thursday, cloudy in the morning and then becoming partly sunny in the afternoon with a high in the upper 60s. And all the way from Thursday night through Sunday night, we'll have partly cloudy skies, highs in the upper 60s, lows at night around 50. Kind of mild weather coming up. WCHL, 8:19, 19 minutes after 8 o'clock.
Wake up every morning with one of Chapel Hill's leading action adults, Ron Stutz in the Morning News. This is 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.
Preparing for the 2012-2013 academic year, Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools Superintendent Tom Frisella and the school board made a heavily contested decision to transfer a couple of teachers from schools at which they had taught for many years and at which they wanted to stay. He says, looking back on it, it's a decision he learned from, but it's not one that many districts ever experience.
It's very unusual that a reassignment's challenged. In other places in the country, this would just be so far from the norm that you work for a school system, and that doesn't entitle you to choose where you're going to work within that system, like any organization. And decisions often need to be made, and it won't be the last one.
That's not the only relocating the Chapel Hill Carborough City School System discussed this past year. Michelle Brownstein is the chair of the school board. She says it was a good thing the discussion about shifting students away from schools that was all they knew didn't happen during an election year, because it was a conversation that needed experience behind it and the ability to soften the blow of passionate confrontation. It's always an emotional issue.
Everybody loves their schools, and we are very fortunate that way. No one wants to leave the school they're in, even when they're in a school that is so overcrowded that they know that their children are suffering from that when they have 30, 31 children in the classroom.
Since the shift from Democratic to Republican control in the North Carolina General Assembly, and even more recently, Orange County citizens, along with other more liberal parts of the state, have been questioning the motives of the legislature and proposing recent bills. ones that affect the school systems involve issues such as mandatory cursive training and the reevaluation of tenure procedures. The Chapel Hill Carborough City schools don't teach cursive. With computers being so prominent, the art of cursive has become lost. Forsella and Brownstein say it's a matter of balancing the available time in the classroom with what's most important in the curriculum for preparing the students for future learning and eventually the world outside of the classroom. Orange County School Superintendent Patrick Rhodes says he and the Orange School Board look at it a different way.
We still teach cursive writing and instruction, and we think it's important for students to be able to read cursive writing. I'm very concerned about legislation which might potentially further reduce the funding available to our schools. For example, up until now, there has not been a virtual charter school established in North Carolina.
Rhodes says while a legitimate option for some homeschooled students, charter schools would take funding away from the schools within the district that they're built. Bills that would mandate legible cursive writing and the memorization of multiplication tables passed the Senate last Thursday with strong likelihood of becoming law. While cursive is a separate discussion, Carborough High School principal Laverne Maddox says multiplication is about more than just the math.
Part of learning the multiplication tables is to give students a sense of the number. Oftentimes when students get to me and they're struggling in mathematics, when we have the specialists talk to us about it, it is because you could probably trace it back to second and third grade where they never really got the sense of the number and how different pieces of things fit together.
Casey Saucy is a parent of two students at Glenwood Elementary. One is in the school's dual language Mandarin program. She says it's great to know that so many people like board members, superintendents, teachers, and administrators are all fighting for what's best for her children.
One of my concerns is that I am raising my children in a pressure cooker. And how do you have them be just kids? How do you let them be outside long enough to have the imagination and the curiosity and the creativity that they're going to need to be good, well-adjusted adults one day, in addition to being really smart and academically advanced?
Those comments and many more were made during the education panel at the 2013 WCHL Chapel Hill Carborough Orange County Community Forum. You can hear the 10-hour forum in its entirety by visiting a link on our website, chapelborough.com. North Carolina's recently proposed House Bill 937 could introduce legally securing firearms on campuses if stored in lockboxes in a person's vehicle. UNC Department of Public Safety spokesperson Randy Young says campuses statewide have voiced their opposition to this bill.
This is certainly something that our chief just felt compelled to address in a show of solidarity with other campus police law enforcement agencies, which have stepped forward and stated that they feel that this is a bad move for the educational community in the state of North Carolina.
The beginning part of the text of this bill states that it's an act to increase penalties for certain crimes in which a firearm is used or displayed. Hard to argue with that. The portion of utmost concern for public safety departments at colleges and universities all over North Carolina says a person who has a valid concealed handgun permit may have a concealed handgun in a locked compartment in a vehicle on the premises of a community college, public college, or public university, and carry a handgun into an assembly where an admission fee is charged. That's quote. Young says there are multiple downsides to allowing firearms in civilian hands on campus, legal or otherwise.
Number one, people with firearms on campus are not trained in them the same way law enforcement officials are. Secondly, it makes it very difficult for law enforcement officers to respond because it's much more difficult to tell who the perpetrator is versus who is taking it into their own hands to respond. And thirdly, any educational institution, be it high school, be it a university, is an area where people are educating themselves and availing themselves of opportunities to mature, to evolve, and to grow and learn. And the introduction of live firearms into that situation is just inherently problematic.
The bill is sponsored by 27 Republican representatives and one Democrat. Representative George Graham from District 12 is currently being heard by the North Carolina House. To read the complete release from UNC Department of Public Safety Chief Jeff McCracken and the complete text of the bill, visit our website, chapelborough.com. A protest of Republican policies at the North Carolina General Assembly has ended with the arrest of 17 people in Raleigh. General Assembly police arrested members of the state chapter of the NAACP and other activists on Monday outside the Senate chambers. The demonstrators called attention through prayer and song to what they called a regressive agenda. Police Chief Jeff Weaver said the protesters will be charged. The protest was directed at Republican action on health care, unemployment benefits, education, and voting rights. The House passed a bill last week requiring voters to show photo ID at the polls, which the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People views as a poll tax. Chapter President, the Reverend William Barber, said more protests at the General Assembly are likely. WCHL News Time, 8:26, 26 minutes after 8 o'clock. Time now for WCHL Championship Sports, brought to you by Southern States Volkswagen of Durham. Good morning, I'm Ron Stutz. Head coach Mike Fox said Game 3 of this weekend's nationally televised series between number 1 Carolina and number 6 North Carolina State might have gone on. They might have been able to play that game if it had been rescheduled for earlier in the day, but ESPN insisted on sticking to the original time. Coach Fox, obviously, was not very happy about that.
I mean, I'll set the record straight here. The bottom line is that ESPN had the right to the game, and they evoked that right to play it at 7 o'clock, and they were not interested in moving it, even though it was pretty clear that it looked like it was going to rain. So it wasn't NC State. It wasn't us. It was television having the rights to the game, and that's the contract the ACC signed and all their sports. And to my knowledge, there was very little negotiation. They were asked to be flexible on the time, and they did not do that.
Coach Fox made those comments on his weekly radio show last night, heard on WCHL. Tar Heels are back in action on Wednesday, hosting the Citadel in Bosch River Stadium. First pitch scheduled for 6 p.m. tomorrow. You can catch all the action right here on WCHL. I'm Ron Stutz.
Hard Chansky Sports Notebook, exclusively on 97.9 FM WCHL.
Michael Jordan has set yet another record, largest tent in wedding history. This is Art Chansky with Tuesday Sports Notebook. Well, our old pal MJ is at it again, adding to his record book 10 years after he finally hung up the sneaks. First, there was his ownership of the woebegone Washington Wizards, which he gave up to come out of retirement and play a couple of seasons, and then was the only owner fired by the other owner before he was able to get his ownership back. Don't screw with the late, great Abe Pollin. Then Jordan set the record at the time, since broken by his buddy Tiger Woods, for the largest domestic divorce settlement in history, a reported $102 million after his wife's attorney responded to Michael's take-it-or-leave-it offer of $25 million with an envelope of photos that her private eye took while following Air Jordan flying around from one fling to the next. Take that, MJ. Although there are more records in between, like the former star who still makes more in endorsement money than any current athlete, now that Tiger dropped off the charts after the infamous hydrant episode with his ex-wife in the driveway. But these last two records happened almost simultaneously, one in Charlotte where Jordan owns the Bobcats, and one in Florida where he lives as an absentee owner who has become a punchline with the NBA fans and the media. Jordan fired coach Mike Dunlap after one season, a dreadful 14-50 record that at least will give the Bobcats another top pick in June's NBA draft, maybe if they win the ping pong ball lottery. Let's not forget Adam Morrison. Dunlap is Charlotte's fourth coach since Jordan took over operation of the franchise in 2007 and the second who lasted only one season. At least Larry Brown and Paul Silas win a season and a half. That's stability for you. The 50-year-old Jordan's latest record is getting married to 35-year-old Cuban model Yvette Prieto in the largest tent ever erected for a wedding in this country. I say homeland because I'm sure some tycoon or drug lord has put up a bigger tent somewhere in some foreign land. MJ's tent had to accommodate 500 guests, including his BFF Woods, and a who's who of professional sports and celebritydom. Appropriately, the tent covered almost the entire driving range at Jordan's favorite golf club, where there was probably the highest stakes Calcutta in weekend golf history downing. Congratulations, his Royal Highness. This is our chance to see ya.
Sister Act, the smash hit musical the New York Post calls ridiculously fun, is coming here direct from Broadway.
It's the hilarious story of a wannabe diva who transforms a ragtag church choir into the hottest musical act around.
And she discovers what sisterhood is all about. So join the 3 million people who've experienced the pure, unadulterated fun of Sister Act, America's new musical comedy classic.
You'll leave the theater feeling amazing.
Opens May 14th for 8 great shows. For best seats, go online to dpacnc.com today.
I'm Mike Benson, Chapel High School class of 85 and owner of the Southern Rail and the station. Enjoy a sunset in the beer garden and then catch a band playing in the original station featuring one of the oldest bars in the Triangle and with no cover charge for bands or DJs. And just open is our brasserie and coffee shop in the front of the station called the Tiger Room. Now serving from 7 a.m. till 2 a.m. with sandwiches, fair trade coffee, and Miss Sophia's homemade empanadas. Come on by and watch the Heels play on the big screen. I'll see you there.
Allergies getting to you? Pollen got you pooped? Dogwoods got you down? There's no need to suffer this allergy season. The doctors at UNC Family Medicine can help. Let us put together a personalized plan to keep you from sneezing and wheezing, whether it's spring, summer, or fall. Appointments are easy, and so is the parking. Find out more on the web at uncfamilymedicine.org. Just another way that UNC Family Medicine is caring for the course of your life.
Today's offer at OurLocalDeal.com is from A Better Image Printing. It's 60% off, $50 for printing services, available now for $20. A Better Image Printing is more than just ink on paper. They're a full-service printer, which means that they can create just about anything. With today's deal, get 60% off any of their products and services, like black and white and color copying, brochures, calendars, business cards, flyers, and more. It's 60% off from A Better Image Printing. It's available for a limited time, so buy it now at OurLocalDeal.com.
Good morning. It's 8:32, 28 minutes until 9 o'clock at WCHL. Time for your Chapel Hill cover of weather, brought to you by the new Tobacco Road Sports Cafe, where you can enjoy a $3 happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 until 6. All full-size menu items, just $3. Tobacco Road Sports Cafe, now open in Chapel Hill's East 54 Shopping Center. Cloudy this morning and then becoming partly sunny in the afternoon. Our high today in the low 70s. Tonight, partly cloudy with a chance of drizzle coming late, probably after midnight. Overnight low 55. Tomorrow, a chance of light rain in the morning and then cloudy all day with a slight chance of showers. And the high tomorrow in the middle 60s.
Local news all day. Breaking news whenever it happens. This is 97.9 FM. WCHL. Chapel Hill Carborough's News, Talk, and Tar Heel Station.
This hour of the morning news is presented by Durham Tech Community College. Want a head start on college or career skills? A great opportunity awaits you at Durham Tech. Online at durhamtech.edu.
You're listening to 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's News, Talk, and Tar Heel Station. Now, back to the WCHL Morning News with Ron Stutz.
Good morning. It is 8:33, 27 minutes until 9 o'clock at WCHL. Online education is here to stay. And according to UNC Chancellor Holden Thorpe, in a WCHL News special with Jim Hebner, Chancellor Thorpe discussed his time leading the university from which he graduated. He talked of the successes and failures with what he's leaving behind for Dartmouth College's interim president, Carol Folt, and what he's headed for at Washington University in St. Louis. Yesterday, we brought you part two of the interview. All this week, we'll continue, and you can also find the segments posted on our website, chapelbro.com. Now, here is part three of the conversation with Jim Hebner and Chancellor Holden Thorpe.
Chancellor, let's talk about the future of higher education. I think, first of all, looking at the most bullish present signs, it's interesting because I find that in business, and I run a business, that when things are going well, it is difficult to get the attention of the change agents it's difficult to be a change agent and difficult to get the attention of folks that things are changing all around them in ways that that would be maybe more difficult if that would be easier if things were not going so well. For example, the things at UNC are going pretty good right now. I noticed that for the first time ever, you have appeared in the top 10 among research universities in the level of funding devoted to research and development. I'm curious, how do you do that?
Well, I'm very proud of that, and it's something that a lot of people worked on over a lot of years. But the building program that was started with the bond issue and then the wonderful way that it was executed by James Meeser and the Board of Trustees and our facilities planning folks, that has made a huge impact.
Takes a lot of your time.
It didn't take a lot of my time, the building program, because most of that was over by the time I came on. But that was all done.
The federal funding, the grant programs, the campaigning for that kind of activity.
What I'm saying is that the buildings that we built before I got here were an incredibly important part of how it is that we were able to grow the federal research funding. So I think James Meeser and the Board of Trustees that served during that time get credit for that. And then what we did to kind of take it to the next level is something that, you know, not everybody was comfortable with, but I believe that I talked about research a lot more than my predecessors have. Politically, it doesn't get you that far to talk about research. The politicians and the legislators don't really know that much about graduate education. And most people, when they think about Carolina, think about undergraduate education and intercollegiate athletics. But the research part of the university, which is $800 million of our budget, is the largest source of funding, and it's the thing that drives the academic reputation of the university the most. And so I spent a lot more time talking about research than a lot of other chancellors do. And I think that paid off because faculty felt that they were at a place where that was valued. So I think that's my contribution to that. But it wouldn't have happened if we hadn't gotten the construction program where it was. And if we could do more with the social sciences, we could drive that number up even higher.
This is certainly good news. And also, when you look at you mentioned this when we first began, that undergraduate applications went up 43% while you were here in the chance. First of all, how's that happen?
Well, the main thing is just the experience that college students have if they come to Carolina is something that is valued. And again, this goes back to the conversation we were having earlier. Intercollegiate athletics is certainly a driver of that. And the most and that's really the most important metric for a university. If students still want to come to your place to go to college, then you can get through most other problems because if you're a private university, you'll get tuition from those students. And if you're a public university, you'll get tuition plus state appropriations that it's given primarily with the idea of educating those young people. So the undergraduate demand is an incredibly important metric for colleges and universities, and the town of Chapel Hill and the sports programs and the great undergraduate teachers and the undergraduate research and study abroad and the honors program, all of that drives that demand, and that's incredibly important.
And the student body, I suppose, gets smarter. When you have more students to choose from, you get smarter ones.
That's correct. Yeah, we're well north of 1,300 on our average SAT score, and a huge number of students from the top 10 in their class. And I believe we tend to average between 7 and 8 AP classes for all of our admitted undergraduates or enrolled undergraduates. Admitted, well, must be somewhat higher than that.
So let's talk about long-term threats. And this problem will, or this issue will go with you to St. Louis. And it's the changing technological world that we live in. It was interesting in the sports panel the other day. I think it was Bubba Cunningham who talked about the birth of ESPN back in 1979. I mean, it was sort of a one camera. It was about as low budget in operation. I don't think we had any idea that it would become the dominant sports media organization in the country, maybe the world. And now I think about that when I think about online education and Coursera and edX. It's exploded. The Coursera has exploded out of nowhere to be an online program that was started by a couple of Stanford professors. Think about Google. And now I think they have Stanford, Cal Berkeley, Princeton, Penn, and now UNC is participating in Coursera.
We are, yes.
And what are you doing with Coursera?
Well, we're going to put a few classes up on Coursera and see who takes them and kind of get involved in this whole movement. I think it's really important for colleges and universities to be engaged in this. In addition to being in Coursera, we also have a deep partnership with a company called 2U, which does a more individualized kind of online education, and we do that with an online MBA degree, and we've launched something called the Semester Online, where students will be able to take undergraduate courses through this 2U project. And my attitude about it, and this is true here and this will be true when I go to St. Louis, is that these things are here to stay, and we need to be part of the conversation and part of the effort that's going into developing these things. But I don't think the extreme views on either side of this are correct. I don't think that that this is going to disrupt residential college education overnight. And I also don't think that it's something we can ignore. I think it's something that we need to be in the game on. And I believe Carolina is, and I hope to make sure Washington University is. They are, because they're part of the 2U semester online, and they have a online degree with 2U as well. So this is a part of the future of higher education. And we, you know, we need to be careful and deliberate and do a great job at this and recognize the limitations and assets of it.
There's a possibility that there are some people in our audience who may not know what Coursera is. So maybe we should explain that it's a free, it's college courses being taught by major universities, free online. Would that be a reasonable characterization?
That's correct. And to large numbers of people. And because it's free, there's generally no credit involved. And so huge numbers of people sign up for these classes, but a relatively small percentage actually completes them. And there's the frontier in all this is trying to assess the work that the students do and to figure out whether it qualifies for college credit. And these are very difficult logistical and technical and pedagogical challenges that we're all working through.
I think the question is, to what extent do we think this is a threat? Because just January of this year, it seems to me every time you pick up the Chronicle of Higher Education or you look at the news media, I'm not sure the public at large is paying a lot of attention to this, but the American Council of Education approved five courses for college credit this year, and there's now a proctoring. There's a new company, I think it's called, is it Proctor U? There are others that will proctor final exams and have these courses count toward college credit. Seems to be that this is beginning to gain traction. The question would be not whether it is an immediate threat, but over the course of the next 20 to 30 years, which is not an unreasonable planning frame for universities, do you not see it as a threat to brick and mortar?
I don't see it as a threat. I don't think that the students who have been admitted to Carolina for the fall are going to go downstairs and say to their parents, you know what, I decided instead of going to Chapel Hill, I'm just going to stay here and go to school online. So I think there's always going to be a group of students that want to come to residential college. And that gets back to what I was saying earlier about the number of undergraduate applications being such an important metric for us. But I think what this movement is going to do is going to allow people who haven't accessed higher education before to be able to do it, either because they can't afford to or because they're in parts of the world or the country where it's not practical for them to do that. I think it will give us a way to provide certain kinds of specialized education to students who need it. And I think it's a great way to get, and this gets back to what we were talking about earlier about the awareness of the university. It gives the universities a great way to get their name and quality and character out there to large numbers of people in a new way. And that is something that universities really, really need. So, you know, you can think of it as and you can see that this in the way people react. I mean, if the schools that got into Coursera early were pointed to by other schools who hadn't done it yet as saying, oh, look, well, Stanford is in this or Duke is in this, why aren't we in it? And because people want their university's name to be out there, and if this is a way to get the name out there, that's something that that is good for universities to show their great classes and their great professors.
Easily, one of the most important parts of the college experience is what you learn outside the classroom, your peer groups, your study groups, the socialization, and then of course the brand that you get as a result of having been certified by the university in some way or another is having completed a certain amount of study. Can you do that? Is that ultimately what will support, you think, residential learning?
Well, I think there are many different things that support residential learning, and it's the experience of being on a college campus and being away from home and all the things that we think of that college does, in addition to the academic part. And then I think that, you know, what we're learning from a lot of these online classes is that some of the challenges we have in the classroom are even greater online. The students who from difficult backgrounds who are need extra help in college do even less well online. And so there are all kinds of things about educational access that this is going to raise, and it's going to help us understand a lot about how people can succeed in school.
One of the things we find in radio stations that have become automated is that one of the things that happen, it doesn't happen in Chapel Hill, happily, because we create all of our own news with our own folks. But if you look at the major market radio stations, what you have is the what we might call is the second-tier local announcer has found himself generally less valuable, as radio stations are able to import digitally a better talent. So if you're a professor and you are a star, it would seem to me that this would give you the opportunity to become a bigger star, because you would be able to reach a much wider audience than you can in your classroom. But if you're not a star, then the market value of your services might go down. Can you envision that?
Well, that's more or less what I was just saying, which is that this is a way for the university to get its name out there and its great popular professors showcased even more. What that's going to mean internally, I mean, there's a common thing about academic politics that there are people who don't feel that everyone is treated evenly, but that's true in organizations generally. And so, yes, there are going to be some star professors who are stars in MOOCs, more so than some of their colleagues. But we have faculty who are on TV more and who are commenting in the news more and who get more research grants. I mean, this is a diverse place. So we're going to have some faculty members who are good at teaching in the classroom and not good at teaching online, and vice versa.
But it's going to change.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And that's what I said when we first started talking about this.
Well, Chancellor, it's going to be very interesting to watch this roll out. And, of course, you're still young enough that the chances are that you may experience all of this during what is likely to continue to be a very active career. It ought to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about more complicated issues, issues having to do with sexual tension, sexual conflicts on the campus, and although UNC is not alone, it's the university that we think about. We'll talk about that when we continue.
Good morning. It is 8:48 at WCHL, 12 minutes until 9 o'clock. This is Rod Stutz, and it's Tuesday morning. That means it is time for Adopt a Pet on WCHL. We do it every Tuesday. We have one of the representatives of our local animal organizations come in with a dog or a cat, sometimes multiples, that are up for adoption. And today, Independent Animal Rescue, Phil is here, and he has a great dog by the name of Kimbo. Phil, first of all, thanks for coming in.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here, Ron.
Thanks for coming, and tell us about Kimbo. What kind of a dog is he, and what does he look like?
Well, Kimbo is a sweetheart of a dog. He is a year and a half old. He's a Pitweiler mutt, so he's part pit bull, part Rottweiler, and part mutt. Just a sweetheart. I was trying to think of how to describe him. The radio, I think I'd call his face, he's a handsome boy. I'd say, for those of you who are into Matthew McConaughey or a Luke Wilson, he's got that kind of sweet smile to him, a boyish smile and a good grin.
I never would have thought about it that way, but he is really incredibly sociable. He just loves being around people.
Absolutely does. The most excited he gets is when he's around new people and, mm-hmm. and dogs to play with, because he loves petting. He loves smiling. It's a little jumpy, but we're working on that one. And I just loves other dogs. Mm-hmm. And that's what we'd really like to find for him, is a household with people and dogs in it to give him lots of social time and a lot of active play time.
And maybe a place to run around a lot in as well.
A place to run around a lot is absolutely great. I have a fenced-in yard, but you know something that you may know, Ron, about dogs, being a dog person yourself, that a single dog in a fenced-in yard is a single dog sitting in a fenced-in yard. Mm-hmm. So it's really someone who doesn't have a yard but who has access to a good dog park like the one here in Chapel Hill or the ones in Durham or Raleigh, it's a perfectly great situation.
Yeah. How do folks find out more about Kimbo?
Well, folks can find out about Kimbo on animalrescue.net. That's the website, animalrescue.net. The .net part's important. And that's the website of the Independent Animal Rescue.
Well, Rand took some pictures of him, and we're going to have them on our website and our Facebook page with a connection to your link at Independent Animal Rescue. How did you get Kimbo to begin with?
Kimbo came on a long and winding path. He was picked up with much love out of a litter about a year and a half ago. And then, unfortunately, the folks who had found him, when they split up, because not everyone loves each other as dogs love people. He was on a road to somewhere else, and we got him over at Animal Rescue, Independent Animal Rescue, and we're very lucky to have him.
Well, he's in a good place right now, and I have confidence that we're going to find a good home for him. He is a friendly, kind of a boisterous personality guy. I mean, he is a great dog, so somebody's going to adopt him soon.
Absolutely, and thank you so much, Ron. I really appreciate you having us on.
Phil, thanks for coming in. Adopt a Pet on WCHL, 8:51, 9 minutes until 9 o'clock.
Now on WCHL, a page from D.G. Martin's notebook.
Everybody in North Carolina should have heard that speech. That's what somebody told me after they heard Tom Lambeth's recent remarks to the North Carolina Society, which was presenting Lambeth with its annual award for service to our state. Lambeth is the former executive director of the Z. Smith Reynolds Foundation, and he told about some of the people and some stories that define North Carolina and its history for him. He acknowledged that North Carolina had sometimes been called the Rip Van Winkle State or the Valley of Humility between two mountains of conceit. Conceit, he said with an aside, is not all that bad if it is an informed conceit. But how did our state rise from its humble status to be the progressive leader in this region? One of the keys Lambeth believes is that its people are determined to do things to make the state a better place, often overcoming great obstacles. Sometimes, he said, the state's people just don't know that they can't, so it turns out that they can and do. For instance, UNC Chapel Hill School of Government founder Albert Coates once told about a farmer from North Carolina who explained his successes despite having no education. When you ain't got no education, the farmer said, you just have to use your head. North Carolinians simply will not be pushed around. Lambeth told about a mountain man who owned a cabin right in the middle of a planned TVA lake. When a government representative came to tell him that he must move, the mountain man, sitting on his cabin porch with a rifle, said he would not leave. The government man asked, why won't you move? Come in and I'll show you. See that fire in the fireplace? My grandfather started that fire, and it's been burning here for 100 years, and I'm not going to move and let that fire go out. Well, the creative government representative worked out a solution that involved moving the entire house, fireplace, fire, and all. The mountain man just explained, the one thing I was responsible for was to keep that fire going, and he did. Another stubborn North Carolinian was Senator Sam Ervin. As a young state legislator, he fought a bill that would have banned the teaching of evolution in the public schools. He was said that the bill would serve no good purpose except to absolve monkeys of their responsibility for the human race. And why do North Carolinians have such a special feeling for its university all over? Lambeth told the story of a man at a senior citizen center up in Madison County, north of Asheville. And this guy was, the old guy was wearing a UNC cap. And so somebody asked him, hey, did you go there? No, he answered, but I own it. Lambeth told his audience to keep working for a better North Carolina, reminding them of that mountain man who was determined to keep his grandfather's fire alive. Quoting the late Congressman Roy Taylor, Lambeth challenged his audience to keep the fire of North Carolina's greatness burning. Otherwise, the Lord may forgive us, but our children and grandchildren will not. This is D.G. Martin.
All right, DG, thank you very much. 8:55 at WCHL, 5 minutes until 9 o'clock. Good morning.
I moved here a few years ago and discovered UNC Family Medicine. I love that the doctors are up to date on the latest medical developments. I love the easy parking. And most of all, I love that my husband and my kids also go to UNC Family Medicine. The reassurance of knowing they are available by email or by phone, plus the knowledge they are among the best family medicine departments in the country, means I have peace of mind about our health care.
Find out more at uncfamilymedicine.org. UNC Family Medicine is caring for the course of your life.
At Southern States Volkswagen of Durham, we're your one-stop shop to find the new Volkswagen or quality pre-owned vehicle you've been looking for. We've got over 200 new Volkswagens to choose from, including Beetles, Jettas, Routans, and more. And if we don't have it, we'll be glad to find it for you. And with deals like ours, there's just one thing you ought to know. There's only one place you'll ever buy a car from again, Southern States Volkswagen of Durham. Get to Southern States Volkswagen of Durham today or visit vwofdurham.com.
You remember the word of the day from Wayne Pond? What's the word? How do you spell it? What's the definition? Call right now, 919-929-WCHL. You can get a $10 gift card to Cruisers. It's all brought to you by Franklin Street Realty. Your number to call once again, 919-929-WCHL.
This is Gerald Ramoyne, General Manager of Performance Auto Mall in Chapel Hill. We're proud of the performance promise, and we're proud of our community, too. That's why Performance Auto Mall highlights a great community service demonstrated by today's Village Pride Award honoree.
Jen Merritt is Executive Director of Canine Kindness, and she's today's WCHL Hometown Hero.
I started Canine Kindness about 3 years ago. It was myself and a group of other trainers, and dog professionals in the Triangle that were just really concerned about the information people were using to train their dogs and care for their dogs that really wasn't positive, that had a lot of force and fear involved in it, and started Canine Kindness as a way to educate people, as a way to provide information and resources.
Now, Jen and other animal lovers have started a pilot project, a pet responsibility curriculum for fourth graders at Hillsborough Elementary. It's called Kids for Kindness.
We were looking for some type of educational program that we could do in the community to teach dog bite prevention and pet responsibility to children. And we knew that there wasn't any big concerted effort due to money and time and energy that any other organization in the area was doing. And I did a little investigation and found that one of the most respected programs for humane education for kids was in Moore County, North Carolina. And so I contacted the people that were running that program, and they were incredibly generous and offered to give us their program, which was a curriculum that focused on responsibility and compassion for animals and advocacy, and also how the kids could really get involved in helping with the pet overpopulation problem.
Why work with Orange County fourth graders?
One of our board members is a social worker that works at Hillsborough Elementary. She has been working with this very bright and articulate group of fourth graders, and we target fourth graders because they're right at that age where they can understand a lot of concepts that we're talking about, and they can go home and engage their parents in what they're learning. And Wendy Stewart, who is one of our board members, thought it would be a great idea to do the pilot project, a 7-session pilot project at Hillsborough Elementary, and it's just been fantastic.
If you'd like to find out more,
it's caninekindness.org, and canine is letter K, number 9. We have a page on the Canine Kindness website dedicated to Kids for Kindness.
Oh, good.
And the one thing that we're hoping is that is in the fall, we'll be able to roll out the Kids for Kindness program at as many elementary schools in Orange County as we can.
Oh, fantastic.
That's the goal.
Jen Merritt, Executive Director of Canine Kindness. Today's WCHL Hometown Hero.
Performance Auto Mall is proud to put today's Village Pride Award honoree in our spotlight. And remember, at Performance Auto Mall in Chapel Hill, we carry Acura, BMW, Chevrolet, Porsche, and Subaru. But we also have access to nearly 4,000 pre-owned automobiles. At Performance Auto Mall, we can find your next automobile, no matter the brand. We promise.
Local news all day, breaking news whenever it happens. This is 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.
It's 9 o'clock.
Here is the equation. Commerce plus social equity plus environmental stewardship. In Chapel Hill, it all equals community. Chapel Hill.